my friends. I'm so excited to be in this space with you. I love that you let me do this journey with you. I have some exciting things I want to share before I get started with the podcast today. As you know, you have joined. Well, maybe you don't know. Maybe you accidentally found your way here. But you are listening to Minutes with Monica, and that is a small portion of the larger portion, the website monicaswank.org. And you're going to start seeing some different things on the website, some next steps, things that you can do to engage on a more personal level, things that you can do to follow up. If you're currently a listener to podcast or you follow the blog, whatever you access from the website, you're going to find more resources for you on a more personal, individualized basis. And I am excited to share all that with you. Some things that are going on at monicaswank.org besides the normal everyday weekly events, which are Monday blogs, Wednesday's encouragements just to get you through your week. Thursdays are videos, short little tidbits just to kind of encourage you as well. They bring in a whole lot more faith aspect to the work that I do here at the website. And then Fridays, there's always a new resource added for you. And Saturdays, of course, is the podcast. But there's some exciting behind the scenes stuff that you may not be aware of. Sometime in the early part of March, middle of March, there should be a new workbook out. I believe this is going to be ebook. And so it should be easy for you to access, but you're going to need to get on a waiting list. So head on over to the homepage. There's a contact button there on the bottom, contact@monicaswank.com, and you're going to want to reach out and have me add you to the waiting list in order to get that workbook. It's going to be a 10-week session full of life lessons, examples taken from scripture as well as life experience, prayer, devotions, activities, things that you can do in a group or alone. I think they're called Bible studies. Anyhow, not really, because this delves more into the healthy living aspect for you, more in that transformational piece, not just in the growing of faith, which is a part of that, but in the part of helping yourself to learn how to live into better, healthier thoughts, which ultimately result in healthier actions. So take a peek. I'm excited. Can you tell? But you know what? Today I want to talk about a different viewpoint. Sometimes we forget to see life from the other side of the lens. And this came full circle for me recently. I got to have I had a patient who, through our conversations, wow, she really represented this for me. And so I want to share a little bit what that can mean for you as well, if we apply that to a different context. But think about it. If you're a nurse and then you suddenly become a patient, what happens in your brain? Well, like I said, I recently had a young lady at the nurse at where I work as a chaplain, and she had come in as a patient. She had taken a very dangerous fall, but she appeared to be alert, and so we had good conversation. I think she had some other things going on, but we're not going to get into that. And as we talked, she shared with me that it was hard for her to be laying there in that space, knowing full knowledge, right, of what the medical team is doing to her. And it got me thinking about this idea of perspectives. Imagine this, right? Some of you probably can relate to this, but I think this is true of any profession. apply that any way you want. If you understand the background of what's going on, it changes your perspective a little bit. And for her situation, we talked about how this might be really a great learning experience. When you are a patient as a nurse or a nursing student, you shift and you start to recognize some different pieces that you may not have seen before. And as this young lady becomes a nurse in the next few months, she's had this experience in which her viewpoint will have shifted dramatically. She's no longer just going to see life from the eyes of the nurse, but she's going to carry around this compassion with her that's rooted in her time as a patient. Have you ever had a similar experience? I think we all have at some point, right? But maybe it's not as extreme as a situation as this one, in which we have a life shift just enough. Let me say that again because I didn't realize it's not sounding right. Maybe it's not this extreme of a situation, but maybe it's more of one in which we just have a life shift, a small life shift, in which we are able to view things from an opposing position. I also think that we're not prone to see these times. Hopefully, I don't step on any toes or any egos here, but I believe that most of us as humans have a powerful, selfish side. Oh, cringe. Not necessarily in the way that it disrupts life, more of a subtle type of selfishness, kind of like a fight or flight side. Well, that has a whole lot of dynamics too. We're not going to get into, but I hope you're still listening because I always throw a nugget out there like that and I bring it full circle for you. So I hope you're still listening. What happens is most typically when we experience shifts like this, we view it solely as a crisis or bad luck, hard times, whatever name you want to give it. But it's not something that we normally gravitate towards for ourselves. It's a conflict of some sort. In fact, this is the piece in which I think our egos get in the way. What we normally do is we view it from the victim's eyes, or what I would like to call, oh, woe is me syndrome. Okay, I'm really not making fun. That wasn't very nice. That's not my intention, because crap happens and it's not fun, right? But sometimes we live into this space, or typically I think we live into this space, oh, wait, woe is me. Which, since so many of us naturally respond this way, I guess it makes it common practice. It's also common for us to look at that thing, for lack of better words, and see it as a humongous mountain or a blazing fire. And I've talked about similar things in some of my other podcasts. But I want you to see it a little bit differently here. Typically, when we see things in that manner, it's this sense of feeling really overwhelmed. In fact, we might even turn away because the danger of the situation seems well beyond our scope. Or we look down. Think about how often you look down. It's a really strange dynamic. I walk the university campus, and when I do so, I realize how often people don't make eye contact. We look down. Why do we do that? Excuse me. With a full knowledge of this thing's presence, typically we keep our eyes focused on the ground and slowly shuffle our feet forward. We understand that at some point we're going to come toe-to-toe with that thing. But if we don't look at it, it's like we don't have to face it until we get there. It's looming, but we don't have to see it. Right? Are you with me on this one? I wonder what would happen, though, if we stared it right in the face and then we put that same foot forward. There are words that people use as encouragement to get us through some of these times in our lives. Things like, oh, God's got you. God won't give you more than you can handle. Oh, don't sink, swim. There is nothing wrong with these words unless you're the person going through the stuff, right? If you're going through the death of a loved one or something like losing your home or your job, or maybe you're in the pit of depression, those words feel more like a knife, not necessarily stabbing you in the back, but a definite sense of its presence as the point of it pokes into the outer layer of skin. The crazy thing about these sayings is that I fully believe them. You probably do too when you're not in the midst of crisis. Why do we believe them? Because I believe scripture, and there are far too many examples of God saving his people in crisis. God also never let anyone go to the point of no return. Think about Job's story. But I also feel they are a little insensitive at the time of a friend's crisis. Are you with me on this one? Going back to something I just said a minute ago, what would the picture look like if we put aside that small, selfish voice that says, hey, let me just wallow in this for a bit? And instead, what if we made a plan of action for when we reached the crux of the mountain? Remember, shuffling our feet forward, but maybe if we're looking up and still shuffling our feet forward, and we're making a plan all along the way for when our toe finally touches the crux of that mountain. I also fully believe that you and I have the ability to make that choice. Since I'm an image person, let me draw one for you. In your mind's eye, picture an eclipse. I know there's different types of eclipse, but picture an eclipse. There are two things visible in that picture. Well, there's a few more than that, besides the moon and the sun. What you really see is the light and the darkness. It is one of those times in which we visibly see darkness in such a contrast. Think about it. We see white noise or white light, and we don't see the darkness in such a contrast. Even when we look at stars, we don't see that contrast, that deep contrast between the dark and the light. But when you look at an eclipse, you have the ability to do that. And when you look at that, do you focus on the light or the dark portion? Here's the thing, it really doesn't matter. The point is that behind the darkness, the light still exists. I know you knew that. Behind the darkness, the light still exists. Crisis or life's difficulties give off the appearance of hiding the real you. I'm going to say that again because I really want you to hear this. The crisis that we go through in life, or just the day-to-day difficulties that we experience, those things give off the appearance of hiding the real you. But they can't, because they don't have the power to do that. So what if you allow the darkness or the trouble to exist in its space and still be you. The darkness has its space. The trouble has its space. But you're not altered. You're not looking down. You're not shuffling your feet. I'm not saying ignore the problems, because that's actually a scarier thought than facing it, right? If we ignore problems, they typically heighten and become far worse than we can imagine. I'm saying focus on the real you in these moments. I'm always talking about who you are at the core. Who are you? Because you have the ability to exist as your real person, your core person, your soul, your spirit, that deep part of who you are that doesn't shift. You have the ability to be that person in the midst of these really dark places. Here's a thought. Start simple. I'm going to say that again. Because we make way too much out of things sometimes. Even if the problems are real, we try to embrace it all in our hands. And it's kind of like, you know that kid's toy that slime you put in your hand, it's a ball when you put it in your hand, and as it warms up, it oozes through your fingers. It's kind of like that. We hold the problem or the crisis in our hand, and as it warms up or we start to face it, it starts oozing through our fingers. So start simple. Think about the story of creation in Genesis 1. The key thing that we see in the story, I'm not talking about the themes or the theology, but one of the key things that we see here is this order and this logic that exist. In this story, God lays everything out. In the first creation account, he lays everything out piece by piece. What are your natural tendencies? Remember, start simple. What are your natural tendencies? Are you an organizer, or do you sort of flow with the moment? Neither one of those is right. Neither one of those is wrong or right. They're both okay. Are you an organizer, or do you flow with the moment? If you put stuff in boxes logically, then that's where you need to start in this process. And I feel you, because that's where I'm at with you. So one of the things you do is you write down what it is that defines the problem. And then you systematically put it into boxes, separating it into more manageable pieces. Not a piece of glob or slime in your hand that you can't hold all together. You systematically put it into boxes so that it's separated into more manageable pieces. Not leaving those of you out who allow it to flow naturally. It's a very similar process. Although I think that this may work for you, I'm not 100% sure. Sometimes you need to visually see things other than writing them on paper. But here's a visual for you. Maybe draw a picture of a mountain ridge. Give it a name. Okay, that ridge needs a name. Whatever the life obstacle is at the moment, that's the name it gets. Job. Disgruntled employee. Disgruntled employer. I don't care what it is, right? Whatever your moment is, whatever your crisis, give it that name. And then on that mountain ridge, draw a river that's flowing up, not down, flowing up and over that ridge. And with each curve that you put into that river, list what it is you would do to flow with the situation. Okay? List whatever it is that you would do to flow with the situation. That might look something like, take a deep breath, smile at that employee today, and move beyond. May maybe that's your systematic way of managing the pieces. It's gonna look different than the person who puts it in a box. For both of these exercises, follow them all the way through until you see a possible solution, or at least the ability to reach the other side. There's another story that I think fits right into this as well, and that's the story of Exodus, because it's built upon this idea of the Israelite people who are under oppression. Like them, there were stages that they had to overcome and adjust to. And as you move towards problem resolution, you might find that you have to rewrite or relabel your boxes or the bends in your river. So be open to this idea. Don't get so stuck in the fact it needs to happen a specific way. Be open to relabeling and rewriting those spaces. Because if you know the whole Bible story, you know that the God who's in control of everything, altered the route to achieve his final goal multiple times. And probably for the same reason, because of people. Think about it. God started out at the beginning with one route, and we shifted it again and again and again. But you know what? He altered that to make it achievable. It didn't mean that he lost control. Oh no, I'm positive he still has more control than we like to give him credit for. He didn't lose control, and guess what? Neither will you. Here's the thing. The part of the boxes or the river curves on that paper, that's your created control. You've never lost control of your life either. You're just being forced to see it from a different viewpoint. Okay, one more thought on this. There's a story of Nehemiah. And Nehemiah is best known for rebuilding. So for you, next step is rebuild. Like Nehemiah, who rebuilt the wall around the city of Jerusalem, this was not an easy task, my friends. He had delays, he had doubts, and he had doubters. He wasn't alone in his doubts. But you know what? He had a goal. Okay, let me say it again. He had a goal. Set a goal to achieve. It could be simple. My friends, it could be make friends with that fellow employee who is disgruntled. It could be give that person a smile each and every day and feel it in my heart and don't feel the bitterness. It doesn't have to be a massive goal. You don't have to solve the problem to achieve goals. Nehemiah ultimately wanted to rebuild the wall around the city. However, he did it in stages and he set a goal. So set a goal to achieve. Maybe it's simply getting over or through it, and that's okay, because you know what? It keeps your focus. Put that goal where you can see it. I recommend a small amount of words to describe it. Why? Because if you say something like, I'll find a way to grieve, this is easy to memorize, and it can go with you everywhere you go without having to fold a piece of paper, put it in your pocket, and exchange it every day with a new pair of pants. Pick a small amount of words to describe it. I will find a way to grieve. And then carry that with you all the time. You know, when I think about this concept, I'm literally taken back to the labor and delivery room. Back when I had kids 100 years ago, they used to tell us to bring something to focus on and keep our eyes on that item. And it couldn't be your significant other because that person could move or they could pass out. they aren't the best option, right? So they tell you to keep your eyes focused on that during the hardest parts of labor. And this is the same idea. If I can see that thing, I can see that goal, I will find a way to grieve. Then I can't see the fire. And all along the way are my little building blocks or my river with its curves that are going to give me the steps to get to that goal. I can't see the fire. I can see the solutions step by step, and I get to the end and I'm going to find a way to grieve. I have another thought for you. It's the story of the building of the tabernacle in the book of Exodus. And it's actually one of my favorites. I had a great professor he was a great professor, but I had a professor who really just drove this idea home, and I loved the way he brought this. But it's one of my favorite stories. There's so much detail that's provided that it actually has minimized the challenge for historians to rebuild it. There's so much detail given in scripture for how to build this tabernacle. But the piece that's speaking to me is that there were groups of people who were designated to carry the tabernacle whenever the Israelites moved to a new geographic location. And each one of those individuals held a different view of the situation. If you carried the Ark of the Covenant, which was said to house the presence of God, would you take more care than if you carried the poles for the front gate or the tabernacle compound? Of course you would. There are two things for you here. Allow someone else to carry the poles while you carry the ark. Okay? If the ark is the most important piece, you carry the ark and let somebody else carry the other pieces. I know that sounds like I'm just being facetious, but no, seriously, guys. Come on, my friends, ask for help. This is not, you know, when I say to you, ask for help, I'm not saying to you, hey, you've got a serious problem and you need to deal with this. That's never what I'm saying to you. I haven't met your problem. I can't make that assumption. What I'm saying to you, and what I help people with as a spiritual mentor, sometimes are little problems or little changes people want to make in their life. They're not these monumentous pieces. I'm not a counselor by nature. I'm not asking for those things. I'm not suggesting you get help for those things. I'm suggesting the smaller pieces. If you need help in the counseling realm, you know that as well, my friend. But right now, in this small little space, ask somebody else to carry the poles for you while you carry that ark. And then remember that sometime during the day, those people that carried that tabernacle for years, you know, the funny thing is they put that thing down at the end of a day. Because it's impossible to carry the weight of such great pieces without feeling fatigue, both physically and mentally. Emotionally, we feel that kind of fatigue. Let yourself put down the weight, my friend. Here are a few more ideas. At night, stop at your bedroom door, turn away from your room, and speak whatever the situation is out loud. And then tuck it neatly at the side of the wall outside of your room for you to pick up tomorrow. I know it feels silly, but it's a physical way of handing it off. You can do this for work, for focusing attention on your children, for whatever event that the problem seems to get in the way of. You can also do one of my favorite things. You can say a small prayer and physically hand it off to God. But above all things, I want you to hear this, above all things, keep it out of your sleeping area. It doesn't belong there. Okay, these aren't solutions. I understand that. These are just suggestions for you to help you broach whatever is the worst in your life right now. And like the nursing student that I met. I hope what you will find is you can have a new perspective for approaching difficulties. That it will not only encourage you through your own personal concerns, but it will allow you to find compassion for others as they travel through their own crisis. So what happens next for you? Well, you're either going to find your own way, or you're going to discover that you need to ask someone to help you do it with you. And if this is where you are, then I really want you guys to contact me. contact@monicaswank.com. Shoot me an email. Then we're going to discuss together what the next best steps are for you. Until then, thank you for allowing me to take this journey with you, my friend. Blessings for your week.